Welcome to episode 6 of the Ferguson Response Network podcast. I'm your host, Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Ricky L. Hines II. Hey, Ricky, what's going on?
Hey, doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Ricky is a Los Angeles native, U.S. Navy veteran, avid Googler, blogger, and of course, founder of the Americans United Again movement and host of two other podcasts, the Americans United Again podcast, and he co-hosts with the lovely Sherelle, the AUA Hope podcast. We are also lucky enough tonight to be joined by Bassem Masri. Hey, Bassem, how are you today?
I'm all right. How about yourself?
Oh, good. Good to hear from you and good to have you here on the line. Bassem Masri is a Ferguson live streamer, and he's been on the ground since day one. He was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, and we're so lucky to have him here today to talk about a bunch of news items, and we're going to go talk about the mainstream media a bunch today as well. If you haven't joined us before, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Ferguson Response Network, and you can also find us at FergusonResponse.org. And if you have any actions in your area planned or you're looking for what's going on in your city, you can go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com. So I had some basic news stuff to start with. First, I don't know if you guys had seen the Jeremy Reed shooting video, which was released, I think it was yesterday that it came out. Did you guys have a chance to look at that at all?
I did.
Yeah, I saw it.
It was, man, I don't even know what to say about that. Like, that was completely unnecessary.
One police was telling them to get out the car. The other one was telling them to stay in the car. They were aggressive from the get-go,
So aggressive. And strangely, they said that they were pulling them over for a traffic violation, but the original officer to approach the car went to the passenger side. Very strange. I hadn't ever seen that before. That was very weird. And I think this happened really close to where I live, about 25 minutes from where we live. So it's a very small town, Bridgeport, which is where it happened. And Jeremy had been in jail for shooting at police officers previously. The one police officer was involved in his previous arrest. And Jeremy,
he already knew him,
and Jeremy currently has a lawsuit filed or had a lawsuit filed against the police department there. It's unknown if this individual was named in the lawsuit or not, but certainly would have known about it. And it's just really disturbing, and I just get sick of seeing it because it's so pervasive. It's so, how many names, how many people, it's just... gross.
Well, yeah, if you flip the script around, you know what I'm saying? If they come up to, like, let's say a white person's car and they got a gun in the car, they wouldn't really flip out as much, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
They wouldn't be sitting there tripping so much. So, you know, it's the whole racial profiling and the whole the way the media and the system criminalizes everybody within the minority, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Populations to where, you know, people are growing up to fear those people for, you know, because they're labeled criminals and thugs and all this stuff, you know. So it's really a preconception before they even get to the car that these people are criminals and all that stuff. And that just really has to stop.
But that's what we teach as a culture. Mm. I mean, as an American culture, that's what we teach. That's what we teach black, white, brown, boys, girls, trans people. Like, these are the stereotypes that play out, and everyone acts on them, and it's terrible. It is. It really is, and we have to stop that from a cultural level. If we ever expect to get past this fully. The thing that bothered me about the video wasn't the traffic stop itself, but if you look, they closed on that car really quickly.
Yeah.
And then, after they made a rolling stop, they decided to pull them over.
Right.
Why were you that close? Why were you driving that fast and you knew that there was a car in front of you? Unless you were just trying to catch up to it because you were following it.
Right. which is clearly what it seems like. And yeah. then,
and you know, it's also the whole hotspot police methodology that they use, where they, you know, sit in the area and they constantly, you know, harass the people that live within the community. You know, like, people shouldn't really be getting steadily pulled over, you know, minor traffic violations, and then to be treated that way because of it, you know? Like, from the get-go, they were being so aggressive over just a stop sign violation. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's unnecessary, you know what I'm saying? It's all completely unnecessary.
And it also just seems like the police officer, you can see him go from zero to 100. He has, like, no calming coping mechanisms within himself.
Right.
He's telegraphing. Right. He's like, I'm going to shoot you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. And then he does. And then he does it. It's like he's already in his mind decided that this is what is going to happen. And he hypes himself up into a frenzied state, and then he does what he said he was going to do. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah, they just a way for them to continuously assert their authority on people.
It is crazy. Obviously, this is new. And actually, the video only was released because the media, mainstream media, local media had requested it. So that's why they had to release it. I guess in New Jersey, they're required to. The other, I guess, kind of big thing, I guess not really, but the State of the Union was this week as well. Did you guys get to read any of it or see it or anything like that? What were your takes on it?
Say again now?
The State of the Union. Did you have a chance to look at what was said?
No, not really, man. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I mean, I saw a little bit what he said about Ferguson. You know, how I guess recognize that there is a problem, you know what I'm saying, that it needs reform. I saw how the MSM were really complaining about how there wasn't too much about foreign policy and this and that and the terrorists when we got all these problems at home, you know what I'm saying? So I really don't, you know, they keep, you know, like I say, instilling fear and using propaganda to allow our liberties to be taken slowly by slowly, you know what I'm saying, to keep ourselves safe from the quote-unquote terrorists.
Right. Yeah, he said, we may have different takes on the events of Ferguson and New York. I'm going to assume he means Eric Garner when he says New York. But surely we can understand a father who fears his son can't walk home without being harassed. Surely we can understand the wife who won't rest until the police officer she married walked through the front door at the end of the shift. Surely we can agree that it's a good thing that for the first time in 40 years, the crime rate and the incarceration rate have come down together, and use that as a starting point for Democrats and Republicans, community leaders, and law enforcement to reform America's criminal justice system so that it protects and serves us all. That was what he said.
Well, okay, think about what he said for a moment. There was something very key, and like I've learned this about his speeches. He likes to hint at stuff, but he's leaving out what's really happening.
Right.
So, for example, when he talks about the crime rate and the incarceration rate falling for the first time for the first time in 40 years, the crime rate's been falling since the late 80s.
Seriously, it's been 30 years it's been falling.
Yeah.
Rapidly.
So what does that tell you? What does that tell you about how people feel about the police? If we incarcerate just about more than anyone in the world.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We definitely do. We have 2.5 million prisoners.
It's crazy.
Yeah, no, we are 100% of the most prisoners than any other country in the world. We have 25% of the world's incarceration rate, just in the United States.
Yep.
Yeah. But you know what really causes is these, like, most of these cuts to the federal budget, which used to shoot money down to the states and counties so that the cops were more, they were well paid. They didn't have to worry about pulling people over to keep their job. Like, they were able to do that community organized policing. Like,
it works.
They have to pull people over just to keep their job. Everyone knows about the quota. And so when people talk about cutting federal spending and things like that, this is what they're advocating. These are the effects of the things that you're advocating. Mm-hmm. Are you okay with that? And if you are, what does that say about you?
Right. Yeah, I thought he said...
I'm a victim of that, being pulled over all the time. And, you know what I'm saying, prior to Mike Brown being killed, you know what I'm saying? I got arrested a bunch of times, you know what I'm saying, just for petty traffic tickets, and they labeled me a criminal for that, you know? Put you like a month in jail for some traffic tickets, and when you come out, you don't get no time served, nothing like that. You still got to pay the tickets, you know what I'm saying? They're doing debtor's prison over here to people. They were doing a lot of unconstitutional stuff. It was deemed illegal, you know what I'm saying? A lot of the stuff's going to need complete reform throughout the whole St. Louis metropolitan
and
area.
And continues to.
Ferguson,
and that's the other thing, too,
Bassam. Municipalities in the whole area.
Right. And that's the other thing. I feel like people don't realize that it's still really bad in the St. Louis area in Missouri. And the police have continued to act completely inappropriately, not just to people that are protesting. Just last night, they've killed another citizen. It has not stopped. It has not slowed any of their illegal activity and preying on people. And
what they try to do with this hotspot policing is to instill fear in the community, mm-hmm. try to prevent crime. It's like collective punishment. You know, that's not what America's about.
Which is so stupid and backwards, because if they had a community that trusted them, their jobs would be so much easier. Mm-hmm. If the community actually trusted them and actually believed and they really were there for the community's well-being, it would be a completely different situation. It would be not a hostile environment, and they would have the support of the people that they are there to help. It's crazy.
Now, check this out.
Yeah.
Now, let's say, you know, white people, not generalizing or anything like that, you know what I'm saying, have, growing up, they're, you know, raised to respect the police, love the police, to rely on the police. Black kids are growing up to see their kids, to see their fathers being harassed by police, intimidated mm-hmm. by police taking them away. You know what I'm saying? So they grow up fearing the police.
Right.
So how would this child ever want to become a police officer himself and try and make a difference in the community, you know, when he has absolutely no faith in the system whatsoever, you know? And then they got voting rights 40 years ago, you know what I'm saying? But they've taken away so much voting rights from people. They've disenfranchised them through criminalization. Yeah. You know, if you're not going to be on the status quo, you can't vote. You know, we're going to find a way for you not to vote. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, there's a systematic way that they do things to keep themselves in power, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Two things that bothered me about the State of the Union speech was this phrase he had at the beginning of the speech, which was that the shadow of crisis has passed. The State of the Union is strong.
I was like,
for who? When did that happen? I must have missed that. And then he didn't mention the word poor once in the speech.
Mm-hmm.
Which really irritated me, because he was going on about the need to protect the middle class and make sure the middle class is taken care of. And it's like, I get that, but, you know, there are poor people in this country. And basically, he completely omitted them from his State of the Union, which means they don't matter, which is clear, obviously, that contributes to why they're poor. But I just am like disturbed that our homeless population is growing across the country. It's crazy. It's like, per usual, two different Americas, and he was only speaking to one. I know that there actually was a State of the Black Union that was released today, which was great. There's a video that goes with it. We'll post for sure the link to that. A bunch of organizations came together, and it's a really great document. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but I'll share it later. The other thing that I noticed this week was in Oklahoma, the hoodie ban bill. Have you guys been aware of this atrocity? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, if it weren't going to lead to the lives of disproportionately black people, like, it'd almost be comical. Really? You're going to ban hoodies?
Hoodies.
You're going to ban an item of clothing so that the police don't shoot you?
It's crazy.
What? What? Where is this okay in America? Where has this ever been okay with in step with our actual values? Not what we do, because we rarely often live up to them, but at least we fucking have them. Look to them. Try to reach them. Jesus.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we're supposed to have freedom of expression. You know, that's completely undermining that. So
totally.
People should be really alarmed by that. You know, they're constantly taking, you know, our rights away, and slowly, slowly, we're not going to have any more, you know what I'm saying? So, and people are complicit in it. I think it's okay.
They do.
So they can be safe from the terrorists.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously MLK Day was this week. A lot of cities had protests, unlike other years, which has been focused on service. Bassam, what was going on in the St. Louis Ferguson area on Monday? I know you guys had some actions going on.
Well, we went downtown. We started a march, you know. Mm-hmm. And from the beginning, we had, you know, we had, like in the little court building, we had politicians that are doing speeches. Politicians that are complicit in our oppression in St. Louis, you know. Mm-hmm. So we let it go on. But, you know, it really sickened me that they're sitting there rallying votes. And, you know what I'm saying, in the name of Martin Luther King, it was very disrespectful, you know. So we, you know, the organizers of the march is the Martin Luther King Jr. Celebratory Commission, you know. And it's run by the governor, you know. And the governor and the city of St. Louis are trying to shut down this homeless shelter that's right close to the route to what we're doing. So, you know, at first, you know, they were trying to really, you know, the people got on the megaphones like, you know, we're here to celebrate Martin Luther King Day. I recognize Mike Brown, but we don't want none of the violence and none of that stuff. Because, you know, the Ferguson protests were there. Mm-hmm. If you get out of the line, we're going to let you know. This is what they're trying to tell us. Mm-hmm. These are like the old school organizers. Another guy got on the microphone like, I was there whenever Chief Jackson, I negotiated with Chief Jackson to get the body out the street. I looked at him and said, man, it must have been the worst fucking negotiation of all time. Seriously.
Yeah. Really?
4.5 hours.
4.5 hour negotiation?
Like, is they're not going to come get them? You
into
know
an
saying?
SUV?
Like,
yeah, okay.
Yeah, so if you got any problem, man, come to me, you know. So, you know, we weren't having none of that, you know what I'm saying? We do our thing, you know what I'm saying? We started marching, but we split the march. You know, they wanted to do something, but we totally hijacked it. Reclaim MLK. We went to the homeless shelter that they were trying to close down, mm-hmm. which they wanted us to stay clear of that because the governor wants to close it. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So, and the governor runs this march or whatever. So we went to the homeless shelter instead, and we did the Homeless Lives Matter. You know, we sat there and we, you know, for about 15 minutes and had a few speeches and stuff. And then the original march was to go to Harris Stowe, where these politicians and the NAACP, the nonprofit industrial complex, were doing speeches too in Harris Stowe College. Mm. That's where the ending point was for the march. So once again, these organizations who collaborate with the system right. to appease us, you know what I'm saying, and these politicians who collaborate with the system to oppress us are sitting there once again rallying votes in the name of Martin Luther King. So we went and shut that down. You know what I'm saying? Like, we went into the auditorium. I got the whole thing on stream. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we occupied it, shut down the facility, got locked down. We got in and out with no problems. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that was our way of reclaiming MLK. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we have a revolution going on right now. You guys want to sit over here and listen to these people who are spinning on the bullshit, excuse my language. And, yeah, well, you should be out in the streets and honoring MLK by supporting this revolution that we got, this movement we got going on, and bringing justice to the people that we have in our city, you know?
Right.
It was real powerful. But it stirred up a lot of controversy, you know? The students were offended. The Harris Stowe students were offended. They thought it was something else, you know what I'm saying? They took it a whole different way, and there was a little bit of a confrontation outside with them, you know.
How did they take it?
I had left. They took it as we were disrespecting their school, you know what I'm saying? Mm. When it was nothing of the sort, you know. So, you know, I honestly, a few of them were trying to be, you know, just attention seekers. That's what I'm not just going to tell the cold hard truth how I see. I'm not going to, you know, beat around the bush. But a few of them were just trying to back those people up, you know what I'm saying? You know, just to get in the school paper. You know, that's just how it works, you know? They're not, you know, they said that they were down for the movement, but yet here they go and they're talking all this about us right here and there, saying that we're violent and this, and they're just spewing the same stuff that the mainstream media is spewing. Mm-hmm. And if you're not involved in your community and you don't know exactly what's going on, then you don't give a damn anyway. So, you know, even through the civil rights movement, there was a lot of people that didn't stand up with Martin Luther King, you know what I'm saying? So,
right.
Absolutely.
You know, there's going to be those types of, you know, unfortunate situations.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I know we had a big march here in Philadelphia, and it was definitely not the usual suspect, so to speak. The mayor, we, you know, we didn't invite anybody to speak that wasn't involved in, you know, planning. It was about 70 different organizations from all over the city, labor unions. We had teachers unions, parents that were fighting for education, a lot of student groups from the different area school districts and also from the colleges. And we have a clergy group called Power that was instrumental in making pulling it off as well. And they've been kind of operating outside of the traditional black clergy groups here in Philadelphia. They kind of formed themselves. It's 40 congregations that have come together. About five of the clergy members that are in that group were actually in Ferguson for a while. They had been doing work with clergy there, and they were at the protests in the beginning. So they feel really strongly about, one, this being a youth-led movement, and two, you know, just that, I guess I should say that they're not allowing this party line that's being sold to the population. They don't believe it. So they really came to the table with a lot of support for the young people and were able to, you know, kind of bring a lot of people together for the last, I think we planned it for like 7 weeks. And we had about 7,000 people come to the march, which is great. And it's, I think the last week counted was like the biggest march in Philadelphia in like 2 or 3 decades. And wow. It was a really great event, and it was all different kinds of people. We had three main things. We have 6 demands, and there are 2 under education, 2 under justice, and 2 under jobs. And so we really were focused on the goals, and everyone's continuing to meet all these organizations. Everything was great. Of course, the next day, we look in the mainstream media, and even if you look right now, all of them say 1,500 to 2,000 people came to the march, which is a blatant lie, like for real. Yeah. Insanity. And it's so obvious a lie. I mean, we got time-lapse footage of a big part, one part of the march. You can see the full thing go through. And the space that we took up at the end where we had our rally is Independence Mall, right where the Liberty Bell and everything is. And the government actually told us, because we had to rent the space, it's federal space, exactly how many people fit in all parts of that space. So we know how many people were there. But a police officer, a captain, that's the official. I'll put quotes around that, because when they say official numbers, that's where the official numbers come from. So I'm going to use that quick story to transition into talking about the mainstream media, how they've been treating the movement, how we can support independent media, because clearly mainstream media is falling right in line with these powers that are so strong that we're trying to fight. And I know, Ricky, at the last show, you were talking about how Salma really showed how much of a good role that the media played in the previous civil rights movement, because they were a good source of information, and they were actually doing their jobs as a check and balance in our society, which they have given up completely.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah. I mean,
well, you know, if you look at the mainstream media, who owns the mainstream media?
Right.
It's the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Who are also making money off this prison industrial complex, you know?
Yeah.
The United States has a history of exploiting people, and that's the backbone of their capitalism. And right now, that's criminals, you know? So that to me is the new slave trade.
Yep.
And, you know, what we have to do is we have to just keep creating our own media and keep expanding on that and making it better and better to try to reach as many people as possible, you know? Which is to, you know, make people more aware of social media, Twitter, those people that, you know, we had a Ferguson Tech Town Hall yesterday, and one of the things that we discussed is breaking the digital divide, which, you know, is getting more, which is basically, you know, access. And a lot of people don't have access to the stuff that we have to get the information that we can get. So we have to break that digital divide, and the more that we break that, the more people will be informed about what's actually going on, you know what I'm saying? So right. that's something that's going to be kind of a challenge. But, you know, Ferguson's aiming to try and facilitate. You know, we're organizing, too. We're not just protesting. It's people don't know that.
Right,
you know,
they don't realize that. Really,
They really don't.
Well, obviously, the mainstream media wants to portray the narrative that makes protests and protesters look bad. So that's the story they're going to tell. But obviously, we all realize that these two things have to work in tandem. You have to keep the pressure on through protesting to force people to come to the table, and you organize so that you have something to come to the table with. It's just that's how it works. That's what all the goal of civil disobedience is. So, you know, it's not a secret formula. It's just something that has worked, and we're just continuing to update it to the needs that we have and the time that we live in, pretty much. Ricky, what were you saying?
It is a new era.
It is a new era.
Mm-hmm. Something that worked 40 years ago is not going to work necessarily today.
Right.
We're going to have to remix it. We're going to have to bring new stuff into it in order for it to be effective because, you know, segregation was over. Minorities got more rights in America, but we're still not done. So we're going to have to take it up a notch, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the other challenge that independent media faces is the fact that many of the people we're trying to reach they don't really have internet access as often.
Mm-hmm.
Or
that's that digital divide. Access.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so every time that we, as a country, nationally, we've decided that maybe we should do this because it makes sense to do, and it creates jobs. The only thing that's really stopped it is how it affected black people.
Mm-hmm.
If it disproportionately affected black people, the majority of Americans hated it.
Right.
If it was a positive impact, if it negatively impacted them, no one gave a shit.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, yeah, sure, let's try that. I mean, that's about as simple as you can put it. We talk about us having one of the worst average internet connection in the world. I think we're not even in the top 10. And so we have one particular industry that we could build out, create jobs, and get people who are struggling now at shitty jobs into better paying jobs that benefit the entire country. But if it's going to help the poor, and black people are disproportionately poor, we don't want it.
Right.
We don't want it at all.
Right. I mean, it just seems it's just like cable providers, whether you have a cable, connection with them or not, are required to provide the basic channels that everyone is supposed to have by law. They could do that for internet and say you have to provide this basic amount of internet to everybody, no matter what.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I mean, it's just one of many.
I know the program that was supposed to launch, it was something like that, like the free government cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if y'all ever heard about
that. Yes, we did hear about that.
But yeah, something like that. I heard there was something like that was like supposed to be coming, but I've been hearing about that for years, you know what I'm saying, and it's still never manifested itself yet. But there is deals like in parts of the country, like with Comcast and stuff, where, you know, they do some kind of discount for it, but it's not at a rate to where we can, you know, really break the divide. You know, we need that nationwide. We need internet in everybody's hands.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
that way, you know, a lot of people's voices have been amplified through the internet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we have more voices on, we have a more of a collective way of being able to speak on our behalf, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, like how we've been doing, you know what I'm saying, but with more people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think the other thing, too, is that as technology gets better, you start to see, like, the internet connected TV become something more common. You know, in the same way that 10 years ago, you know, an HD TV, a regular HD TV was like, you were balling, son. Like, but now everyone has one.
Right.
You know, that's the new standard.
Right.
For most people. So it's, as we progress, I think that's definitely going to help independent media get recognized. I mean, this type of, video podcasts, our podcasts, these things are, they're not able to reach as many people as we'd hope.
Right.
And the type of people that we'd hope to reach so that they have an outlet or a way of hearing independent objective media. Like the night that they decided not to indict Darren Wilson, Bassam, I watched her live stream, and it, like, there's no way anyone could watch that and not wonder what the fuck is going on in America. How is this okay anywhere?
Absolutely.
It was wild.
Quite a few people watching.
Yeah, it was.
I think for independent media, I had almost like 100,000 people watching live. I mean, that was the most I ever had. You know what I'm saying? That was, it reached a lot of people. You know what I'm saying? And I was happy I was able to get that to people. You know?
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I really appreciate it because it helped me to further frame the argument. With respect to our podcast, like, this is, we all feed off of each other. I'm a firm believer of that. Every time that we hear an idea, we consider it, and we genuinely consider it, you know, it's an exchange of ideas, and it's what's gotten us thus far.
Absolutely. And I think that internet access has gotten to the point, at least in terms of our society, that it's no longer a luxury. It has ceased being one anymore. Now it's a way of connecting to the world, and you have to be connected to the world. So, and this is important, not just for news, but it's important for education. It's important for job search. It's important for so many things that now our society is becoming increasingly more dependent upon use of the internet and access to information and connections that are through the internet. I mean, people file their unemployment on the internet. They get their doctor through the internet. So much stuff is going that direction. So it's gotten to a point where the things that people are expected to connect to through it, it's not a luxury any longer. Now it's something that we all need to be required to have. You know, people forget at one point school up until the 12th grade was not guaranteed to every citizen in this country. They had to pass a law for that to be the case. So
yeah, it's been less than 100 years since
exactly. So it's not as though we can't recognize that, okay, now we do need this, you know, and that needs to happen for sure.
Well, the common carrier rule. I mean, it's almost like that, where you regulate them like you regulate telephones.
Yep.
So when people were too poor to get telephones in the 50s, 60s, 70s, there was help for it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, why are we not doing this? People always talk about, like, the good old days or the 50s and 60s, about, you know, their time. And it's... Okay, cool. We can go back really, to that time. How about we do that racially equal?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I honestly think that racially equally has not really changed that much, you know what I'm saying? Because what I've learned the last 3-4 months is that there was a lot more white supremacists than I thought that was there previously. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, they done took it off their hoods is all, you know, and they're... police officers, and, you know, like, there was that Garland, Texas rally, anti-Islam, 500 people showed up, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, preaching all that garbage that they were preaching about human beings, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, that type of stuff was done with hoods on 40 years ago. It's like they've gotten bolder, you know?
Yeah.
And then they, you know, to cover it up, they say, oh, well, I'm patriotic and I'm, you
well,
know,
the First Amendment,
whatever, you know
all
what I'm saying?
Of this
yeah.
crap.
You know, they cover it up using that. It's just a huge cycle.
It is a huge cycle. The other thing that I found really crazy right now is that now mainstream media is chopping up social media from independent media sources and calling it journalism. I keep seeing this on major news outlets where it'll be two paragraphs and then a page full of embedded tweets from independent media sources. And they're
editing
editing this content to tell whatever story they want. It's not even the story that's being told on social media. So it's like,
ask permission.
It's doubly egregious to me. First of all, you're not even doing your fucking job. So let's start there. You're not even doing the job of actually reporting something. And then the people that you're getting this information from, you're not even telling their story correctly. So What is their purpose exactly? Clicks, I guess. That's what I've determined. It's the only purpose they have is clicks.
Money.
That's it.
We turned our fourth estate into a cash cow. This is what happens. I don't think people really realized that when they said that they were okay with, letting
Rupert Murdoch buy. Yeah, exactly.
That's essentially what we've done. We've allowed journalism to die largely. And, it's absolutely sad. But it doesn't have to be this way. We've stepped over, we've went over the bounds, or we've went too far on things far too often, and we dial the shit down. We overreact a lot, and then it's fine. Mm-hmm. We can dial this back down because this is terrible.
And how do we?
Yeah,
put...
I mean, we definitely have to take down the system. You know what I'm saying? And the only way I think we can effectively do that is from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the means, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Only God can tell us that stuff. You know what I'm saying? But it's going to definitely have to take a lot more people to mobilize. You know, we're going to have to touch. We're going to have to touch more people.
Which actually,
and, that's going to be kind of a challenge. You know, a lot of stuff really. You know, we can start a movement through college. You know what I'm saying? We just have to get. We have to really organize on a massive level, just mm-hmm. like they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But my biggest question has lately been where, though?
Mm-hmm.
Because really the only thing that white America would allow black America to do is go to church. So we could, there was that common ground where we could do it through church. But that's no longer the case now. So is this going to be something that has to be over the web? Is this going to be something that has to be, how do we better organize, restructure? Yeah.
In the streets, mass demonstration and civil disobedience. We just got to keep doing it. We got to figure out to do it strategically to where we are, hurting them economically. Also, boycotts, all that stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and
that's the only way they're going to have to learn, just through money. We spend money within our own communities, mm-hmm. We can be able to have the capital to start creating our own jobs, so we have to rely on the system for everything because they're going to keep disappointing us.
Yeah.
That's what they've been doing, for 400 years. I don't really think that they're going to just stop doing it because we've been protesting for a couple hundred days.
Right.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to work like that. They still haven't changed a single thing. So they're still killing people. They just killed somebody last night mm-hmm. in the same area where we started all this. So there's not going to be no easy solution to this. There's going to be very, very, there's going to be a long ride. You know what I'm saying?
It is.
We're going to have to know that. If you want to get, into this, you're going to be involved with this for a long time, maybe for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
That's how long it might take.
It's true.
It might take 20 generations. We don't know.
And I think that's the thing is we have to start thinking of it in those terms and raising our children under those terms and making the society understand that it's just something that we're going to be consistently having to fight for because that is how pervasive the system is. And actually, this brings us into the next segment we want to talk about, which is kind of confronting apathy in our own communities, in our families, in society in general, because we really do, as you said, Bassem, need to get a larger mass of people to reach them, to awaken them, to open their eyes and let them join the cause, because the larger it grows, the better equipped we are to put that pressure and also to have more minds involved in thinking of how we put that pressure and what we do with it as well.
Exactly.
Ricky, exactly. What are your thoughts on that? Kind of just combating the apathy. Where does it, I always wonder, where does it, I know how we get to the apathetic place because it does seem insurmountable, but I do think that, this couple hundred, 160 whatever days that this has been going on, certainly from Ferguson and forward, through the rest of the country now, certainly people are aware that it's going on. I don't think I've encountered anybody that doesn't know it.
Yeah.
So where does the apathy, how is it still setting in with people?
It's one of those things that's going to have to be eroded slowly.
Mm.
When you get to that point, very little will make you come back. And it's hard. I completely understand giving up, but
Think what you're really giving up on, though. You know.
Yeah, it's exactly. Really, like, you know, like, be honest with yourself. Like, if that's okay with you, fuck it. But that's a terrible way to live.
Mm-hmm. What else? What else would you
do? Because there's no hope. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think we were talking about the effect of it on the psyche and your mental health. Like, it's very difficult to be doing protests, to be focused on this work. It's not easy work. But I know that my soul feels really good. I know that I'm happy about the things I'm doing, and I just can't imagine that that feeling is there when that's not the case, when you know that this system needs to be brought down and you can play a role in doing that and need to. So I think that it's going to be a tough slog to kind of awaken people and to let them see that, there's going to have to be sacrifices made, and it just is the way that it is.
It's easy.
The way I try to tell people is you don't want to wait until this happens to you for you to want to get involved, and then it's too late. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to have to go see your child dead in the street because the police thought something was, you know, he had a toy gun or something. You know what I'm saying? For you to want to have to get involved, and then the movement eroded or whatever happened. You know what I'm saying? That's going to be something that you're going to have to live with. You know what I'm saying? And then also, you might think about it as, when you're doing this here, you might be saving your children or your nephew or somebody who's close to you. You know what I'm saying? Just by your actions alone, you know? Because what we're doing is, we are mobilizing people across the nation with this. You know what I'm saying? We have mobilized people across the nation. This has become a national conversation now. And if we don't finish this conversation the right way, there's going to be consequences behind that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And you don't want those consequences to land in your backyard. You know, and then say, if I could have, would have, should have. That's not the type of world that we live in. You know, so we really want to be proactive in your, because that's what our, you know, we've been trained and raised as Americans to do, you know, we the people and all that good stuff that they taught us in school that was, you know, nice and dandy, but didn't turn out to be true. You know, I don't like to be lied to,
right? You know,
and I don't think anybody else should neither.
It's true. It's just not true for us.
Yeah,
to be honest,
yeah.
I mean, there is a white American, there's a black America. There really is. It's two completely different worlds. People, I think that the people who are able to see both of those worlds are the ones who really see how inherently fucked up it is.
Right.
It's really easy to be ignorant and give up when you don't know anything.
Yeah, you know, because me as an Arab American, I've walked both worlds. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I grew up in Florissant, which is right next to Ferguson, where it was 95% white. You know what I'm saying? Before 9/11, nobody knew what Arab and all that stuff was. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then after that, before that, I really got to hear what these kids were saying about kids of color. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And it was disgusting. You know, but I was young. I didn't really, you know, play into it like that. It's not the type of person I am. You know what I'm saying? I've been like this since I was a child. Very, you know, to myself, you know what I'm saying? Loner type, you know? So, I never, until 9/11, then I started receiving the brunt of those, the racism and everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then while, St. Louis has a plan to gentrify St. Louis, a lot of the African Americans that lived there poured out into Florissant, and a lot of the white residents left, you know, because that's just how it is in St. Louis. It's segregated.
Right.
It's one of the most segregated cities in America. Mm-hmm. So, racism is built deep into this specific society right here, and the police enforce that with their, you know, with their policies and their methods of doing things, you know, to keep a certain people in check, to keep their the way they move, you know what I'm saying, with the predator policing. You know, constricting movements, all that stuff, you know, you'd be able to control them physically, economically, any which way they can.
Right.
And that's really what we need to battle is, you know, the government's control on people.
Yeah,
you know,
and their control
the limitations
over
the government can implement on a citizen.
Right, and their control over areas that used to be for social justice, like the NAACP, the black church as a whole, you know, they have instilled this responsibility politics angle in those types of organizations in our communities that feeds into this apathy. Because what it allows them to say is that if I look a certain way, if I dress a certain way, if I act a certain way, it won't happen to me. It's incredibly dangerous, number one, because that's bullshit. And none of those things can save you from a police officer that gets edgy and just decides that, you know, you fit the profile and that's going to be the end of it. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. None of that shit matters. So it's dangerous, one. But number two, it feeds into this apathy because it reinforces this idea that there's something we can do to make someone stop treating us badly because of the color of our skin. It's ridiculous.
It's battered spouse syndrome.
It
Think
is.
About it. It's that's exactly what it is. It's, you know, whatever happened, whatever bad happens, you know what? That person deserved it.
Right.
No matter what, you know, they could have done this, or this. Oh well. And it's like that's not how this works. You know,
people justify Mike Brown's death because of what happened before that. You know what I'm saying? But we're supposed to have laws in this country to where people are supposed to have their day in court, you know? And, you know, maybe if Darren Wilson wasn't justified in shooting Mike Brown, the way I feel the first or second shot should all he had to take and the other four were unjustified.
Right.
That's what made it murder in my book, you know? The final blow to the head.
Absolutely.
That went through his eye. That was murder, you know? So, yeah.
And it's happening everywhere. We had a case in Philadelphia like 35 days ago. Brandon Tate Brown shot in the back of the head by police. They claim he was running back to his car to get a gun. Ridiculous. It's in a complete business district with cameras everywhere. No footage, allegedly. They haven't even told his mother anything.
Wow.
They haven't even released the name of the officers involved.
On the south side, they say that he had a gun. You know what I'm saying? But he got shot 6 times in the back, and the gun had no DNA on it.
You know what?
After they did the autopsy and everything.
And that one threw me for a loop because the description that the police officer gave of how he was running and firing, and after the autopsy, where those bullets hit him, there's no fucking way that you can run like that. No human being he would be so contorted that he wouldn't be able to run.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He would fall.
San Luis PD is known to do dirty stuff, man, to do really dirty stuff.
But they all are. That's what they do. They shoot and then they justify the shooting afterwards. Oh, the person did this and did that. But you didn't know that when you killed them. So what does that have to do with anything?
Exactly.
You just executed them.
They put their names out. They put their names out and they demonize the victim of it. But then the police officer's hitting them with the name gets withheld. All the social media's wiped out, all that stuff, so that we couldn't see what type of person that this cop was.
Yep.
It could have been a racist, you know, just like what they ended up saying about Flannery, Mondaire Myers' murderer, that he was an Islamophobe and that he was making jokes about black people and that he was a racist, you know? And that's something that can go into, like, you know, somebody's character, you know what I'm saying? So that's just like they demonize the young man that they killed. They should also do the same thing with the cop, but make everything transparent.
Right.
But that's not what they do. You know, that whenever a cop like Darren Wilson is put so much scrutiny on them and they're trying to get him indicted, they're putting themselves, they're going to indict themselves if they indict him.
Right.
You know, I wasn't surprised when the feds didn't indict Darren Wilson because they'll be indicting themselves. You know what I'm saying? So, we can't keep going to the system for help because it's not going to do nothing for us ever.
So one other thing we wanted to talk about, and I don't know if you've seen this at all in Ferguson or just as you've been traveling, Bassam, is this notion of, you know, division and distraction within people that are working the movement, infiltration of organizations, people trying to cause division within them. I know that the case that's being brought in Minnesota against the Mall of America protests that occurred. They've arrested, I think, 10 individuals. And it was kind of strange, you know, that the action took place. Everybody came into the mall. As soon as they got in there, this big thing went on the screen and said, this is an unlawful action. You need to leave. Anybody that doesn't will be arrested. They had their action and then they left the mall. And then they arrested 10 specific people. They didn't arrest everybody. They went after specific people. And it was very strange. Nobody could figure out why they went after these specific people. And now that they're pressing charges, they have to release the evidence they have. And it turned out that they had very deeply infiltrated the planning of the action. They had been going to all of the planning meetings. They had been attending all of the, literally, they were very deep into it. And that is why they were able to target these specific people. And the charges they bring up against them is crazy. And I was really thinking about this because clearly they knew that the action was publicized, so people knew. Obviously, they want to get people to come and have a mask that's going to go and do it. And it's clear to me that the mall just told the police department that this needs to be taken care of. And they put a task force together to infiltrate and to take down these, in my opinion, lawful protesters. It was a peaceful demonstration.
Wow,
they stood in a mall and walked out.
It goes to show you that how the system caters to the corporations and the big business in this country before they do its own citizens.
Absolutely.
Who are doing what's legally and what's they've taught us is the best way to do it, you know. Civil disobedience, mass demonstrations, peaceful protests. You know, this is the way that we do stuff here in America, nonviolently, you know. And then when you have something like that, it's just completely hypocritical.
Yeah. I mean, we according to the researchers at Princeton, we basically live in an oligarchy. So this type of behavior, it's so disturbing, but it's like, how do you not figure this out? You know, there's just very basic information you can look to and just say, wow, this is fucking disturbing. You know,
I don't know. You know, the capitalism is one of the big problems, and it's a lot of different things. You know, people don't want to hold on to power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and you.
What
can,
if we see Clinton versus Bush again in the next election?
Oh my God.
How would you? That'd be crazy. You know what I'm saying? I think it would be a revolt if that wouldn't be honest. It happens. We keep having these same powerful families taking control of the White House. You know what I'm saying? And not being in, just doing the same thing over and over again, making the same mistakes and feeding the same pockets and making the 1% even more powerful.
And then they mask it because this is really, they make all of us think that we are each other's enemies. And this is what really irritates me about this anti-protester thing is that most of America is getting fucked just as much, not as much in terms of the police brutality angle, but monetarily, nobody's doing well. You know, and they are killing white people too, these police officers, by the way.
Yeah.
They are just killing people. They have zero accountability. Whatever's in the community that they're policing, that's who they're killing. That's the truth of the matter.
Unless there's money there.
Well, they have to prey upon their citizenry in order to keep themselves open for business. That's all it is. And to feed that prison industrial complexes for their governor and senator buddies who own these prisons, who fund their campaigns, who keep them. You know what I'm saying? It's like I say, it's the capitalism, the way that our economy enables that stuff.
And the capitalism has seeped into the social justice, I would say, you know, not-for-profit sector in such an insidious way that we don't have any monetary backing for real change or pushing for real change. And what we have is established entities that are fat and happy with what's going on. And not really serving their purpose at all, which is why it's really important that we support independent media, that we empower more grassroots organizations to spring up, because the ones that are there, we just can't depend on them to do this work anymore. It sucks. And I hate to, you know, it's a terrible realization to come through to, but it's just a fact. And I see it here in my city here when you have 40 black clergy that have said, you know what? We can't roll with those people anymore. They are concerned with political access. They're concerned with monetary access. We are concerned about making this city work for everybody that lives here. And if you're not in with that, then you can't work with us. So when I hear...
If you're not with the status quo, you're not... You can't be a part of this. You know what I'm saying? We're going to franchise you any way possible to make your voice in government. Or we don't want you to participate in nothing, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't... This is what bothers me. I mean, I don't see much of a problem with capitalism being the system so much as the way that we practice it. And I think since it's just been the commodification of everything and everyone that we, like, over the past 35 years,
mm-hmm.
where the, like, nothing about you isn't for sale. Look at, like, that's why those Jerry Springers, that's why they had audiences, like, because you could sell anything. You could sell stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You could sell your own stupidity, and people would pay millions for it. Mm-hmm. And so it just became this cycle. Like, we in the black community always talk about how things have gotten dumbed down with our media and our news. Like, it's across the board.
Right.
Like,
yeah, and it's that digital divide that's really perpetrating that, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Not getting enough technology in people's hands. That's the new way of keeping the slave illiterate.
Mm.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's the new way of keeping absolutely. The slave from not being able to read and participate in day-to-day activities with the people that do, you know what I'm saying?
It's true.
And to keep you in the shell of the mainstream media and the propaganda.
Yeah, and I mean, across the board, and on, like, that's happened to black people, and then on top of that, you've had the, again, that commodification of self happen across, you know, across America as a whole. So you just, again, it's one of those systems where it just disproportionately affects black people, and we're fucking tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this were happening to white people at this rate, this shit would be done next week.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
Totally. But it's not. I mean,
just like how those gun nuts conservatives, how they keep, you know, the Second Amendment, you know what I'm saying, really close to them, you know what I'm saying? It's the same way, like, they're just gonna keep reinforcing what they want, you know, and what they feel is gonna keep them in that position of power, which is violence, fear, intimidation, etc. You know,
yeah.
Because I mean, if we didn't have AK-47s being sold in the stores, we wouldn't be having so many people with AK-47s shooting people. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah, absolutely.
There's definitely a problem with our gun control in the United States, and that's something that we're going to have to address. And if you know, like. I know that, you know, our Constitution is, you know, the right to bear arms, but we have to regulate that. This is getting too much, you know.
Right. And then, well, here's the thing: if people understood, like, the actual origins of the Second Amendment,
exactly,
and how it was crafted to kind of allow militias to take over parts of land from the natives, they'd see it completely differently. We just have this thing that it's going to protect us against the government. No, that's not. The government has fucking nukes. The government has 11 aircraft carriers. I was stationed on one. There's no way that's going to happen. Like, you're not going to protect yourself with an AK-47.
Nope.
If the government wanted to, they would fly drones over this place and just fucking start shooting people.
I mean, truthfully, you only have to look at Ferguson to see what the government can do when they want to.
Exactly.
They can just turn your neighborhood, your city, your town, whatever, into a war zone like that.
So long
and they
as
don't
you
have
allow.
To think about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And it's not going to be the guns. It's you fucking standing up and saying, look, you don't have a job anymore.
Right.
Like, you don't need to be fine. You know what? You made it. You
the
made
way they criminalize everybody, man. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, the way, you know, drug addicts are treated as criminals and
so true.
It's a medical problem.
Yep.
You know, and they're exploited for the prison industrial complex.
But yet somebody can steal billions of dollars and they get off scot-free. Which of these crimes is more damaging?
You know what the number one indicator for drug addiction is? Poverty.
Yep.
Because think about it. You are so low, or you are so out in your fucking luck. That every once in a while you need something to take the edge off. And then it becomes a habit because certain things are fucking addictive and your life just gets worse anyway. That's what's happening to people.
Mm-hmm.
We can treat that. It's not something that...
You know, they did it in London, and I think it's England or Netherlands, is that you just gave it to them. They prescribed it to them. You know what I'm saying? And what did that do? That eliminated the drug trade. Eliminated the violence that comes with that. Mm-hmm. Eliminates the crime that comes from people having to get drugs. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You know, just a simple thing like that. You know, you take a person and you make him, and you don't criminalize him, you humanize him. He's able to function normally. You know what I'm saying? And you basically eliminate all these problems that we have in the community, you know what I'm saying? And then we can start, you know, having people to actually make a living and be able to make a dignified living. You know, that's going to stop a lot of crime. You know what I'm saying? It's just really systematic thing that we have to work on. That's going to stop this. That's going to filter down. It's going to stop a lot of the stuff that's happening in the streets. You know what I'm saying?
It's happening in a lot of countries.
We've had 16 murders in St. Louis already this year. Hmm. It's the 22nd.
Right.
Wow.
That's almost a murder a day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I know, and I was in the neighborhoods today, there's a lot of static. There's a lot of beef. Hmm. And it's all over money and robberies and getting people back, you know, street justice, you know right. what I'm saying? And this is stuff that could be prevented if we had more faith in the system.
Yep.
And yeah, and people could make a dignified living. There's a way to stop all this. But like I say, the people in the 1%, they're making money and exploiting people. You know, they are in these prisons, you know, prison labor force, all that stuff. And it's the new wave of slaves. They got 2.5 million slaves in jails all across the country.
Only time this slavery
generating revenue. Yeah, generating revenue, you know, making stuff, you know, for you know, and at the same time, the government is spending all this money to house these people, you know, so they're getting paid two ways, you know, and it's just a cycle because the way the media and the propaganda, you know, there's like what I call this my little word, criminalophobia, where people, you know, criminals are just, you know, put on the bottom of society. People, you know, they're demonized and looked at as scum and they deserve to die. You know what I'm saying? It's cool if Mike Brown got killed because he stole a Swisher.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And we use that to justify the spending of the money on the prisons instead of education and the stuff that we really need to make this country better. And how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and this is where when people say that they're fiscally conservative, it bugs the fuck out of me because this isn't fiscally conservative. You would actually stand to gain more as a matter of GDP from investing in those people and allowing them to have decent jobs, their productivity going up, than you would housing them in the fucking criminal system. Mm-hmm. You're subsidizing you're subsidizing slavery. That's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is
what I'm saying. This country has 400-year track record of exploiting people for their own capital gain. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's not just going to go away, you know what I'm saying, all of a sudden. You know, slavery went away, all of a sudden they had a Great Depression.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? They had to figure out a way to sustain an economy and exploit people. You know, and that's what they've been doing. They exploited the Irish. And the people from Italy when they first got here, you know, that's just how they do things. You know what I'm saying? And it's just been a cycle of that for years and years and years. And Ferguson, you know, is really one of those, you know, movements where it's just enough is enough. And you know, even though it hasn't rippled through the system yet, and we haven't had no effect, you know, it's going to. You know what I'm saying? We might see these changes 5-6 years down the road, but. You know, I can tell you right now, the people that are organizing here have there's no quitting. You know, we have a very big core of organizers that are, you know, literally dedicating their lives to this, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, a lot of us here have been awakened. You know, we never really had movements or anything like that here in St. Louis, you know what I'm saying? This is the first of its kind. We were all in our own little world before August 9th, just trying to survive. And, you know, like, me, I'll tell you guys, I've been arrested over 75 times in St. Louis just for traffic stuff, nothing serious, you know what I'm saying? I thought it was just me, you know, I was a loser. But, you know, it turns out that, you know, I thought this happens all around the nation like this, you know? I didn't know that it was just this area that really, where their predator policing has gone to an extreme.
Right.
And when we came out August 9th and I saw the anger that everybody else had and it matched mine, I knew that this is something that is going to sustain from just seeing everybody out there and doing what happened, you know what I'm saying, and the unity that came from that. And then, and you know, Ferguson's police, you know, united people all over the world and started a national conversation. And that's something that they can't take back. And so, you know, so something is going to have to change. You know, it's inevitable. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
No,
so
it's true.
We're just going to have to be able to dictate that change in a positive way.
Absolutely. I said that in my speech I gave on Martin Luther King Day was that, you know, we all were waiting for Ferguson. We didn't know it, but we were waiting for the Ferguson protesters because we really needed somebody to show us what you just said, Bassam, which is that, look, they're just as fed up and pissed off, and we are right to be angry. We should be angry. That's correct. Anger is the right feeling to have. And it allowed so many people to understand that the way they were feeling wasn't crazy and it wasn't incorrect. It actually is exactly how we should have been feeling. And I think it's really, that's why it's resonated so much across the country and across the world, because it's just truth. And you guys, you know, really gave us the permission to exercise those rights because you did it first, and we were like, okay, this is something that needs to happen everywhere because this shit is happening everywhere. Thanks again so much, Bassam, for coming on the show. I really appreciate you being here to talk with us about all this stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can find Bassam on Twitter at Bassam_Massery. That's BASSEM_Massery. And thanks again for joining us. I wanted to also do a quick organizational spotlighting the Million Hoodies Movement for Justice. You can find them at mhoodies.org. Okay. The Million Hoodies Movement for Justice is a national racial justice organization founded to protect and empower young people of color from mass criminalization and gun violence. By leveraging strategic communications, grassroots organizing, and creative technology, we seek to build a safer and fair America by transforming the public narrative on the criminalization of young people of color while providing the tools necessary for communities to protect themselves. They empower a network of 50,000 plus members and college chapters across the United States, and home to the Frequency and online media platform sharing stories from our members, aggregate news, and feature multimedia. They are running both a Teespring and a Color of Change.org petition fighting the Oklahoma State Bill number 13, which is the hoodie ban bill. So I'll include all that information on the show notes. So what's been going on with you, Ricky?
Nothing much. Still trying to work on a new episode of Help, but that should be out, I don't know, this weekend.
Awesome.
Hopefully.
I love those.
Yeah.
Very cool. Not much going on with me either. Just kind of recovering from the march, and we have a big meeting Saturday following up on kind of deciding when and how we're going to deliver the demands to the necessary individuals, and then also what our next steps will be if and when the demands aren't met. So
right.
Should be an interesting conversation. Lots of different people at the table. Should be interesting to see.
Yeah. Oh, did you catch the video podcast I was on?
No, I didn't. What was that?
It's Truth Live. It's Friday night.
Oh.
That's Friday night.
Is it? Can you watch it like after the fact?
Yeah. I'll post the YouTube link to it in the show notes.
Cool.
But that is the reason that I don't debate conservatives. is because no matter what they do, or no matter how bad you run them into the ground with the bullshit that they're telling you, they walk away like they felt like they won.
They always think that. They're delusional.
Oh, well, I gave it to him. What? It didn't make sense. we were talking about keeping it real. You can't even keep it realistic.
I need a T-shirt that says that. Oh, goodness. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll definitely get to put that in. We'll put that in the show notes. That'll be great. As always, you can find Ricky at aua.dot.org on Twitter sometimes. And you can always find auamovement.org on the website, and also Facebook /AUAMovement. And you guys had a couple new episodes come out, which they're really good.
Yeah.
So everybody should definitely check those out. You can find me on Twitter at Leslie Mack. And again, you can find this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, Ferguson Response Network, or go to FergusonResponse.org. And if you have any actions coming up in your city or you're looking for a way to get involved, go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com. Any final thoughts on our topics for today?
No, I thought it was a great, productive discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Glad we were able to have it.
Yeah, for sure.
And again, thanks, Dustin, for joining us. Mm-hmm. Really appreciated it.
Absolutely. It was really great to have him on. You know, being on the ground, it was great to hear what happened there, MLK Day, because I had seen some reports on that and get his perspective. You know, I've posted, I think, a couple times on social media that anybody who suggests that the center or heart of this movement be anywhere but Ferguson can just get the fuck away from me, because, you know, we really need to recognize the situation that, not only that it started there, but to be perfectly honest, that the horrible conditions that exist there are unique to that area and continue to be really shitty. And they're continuing to treat both protesters and the citizens of that area just, I mean, really disgusting. And we can't let that part of the story be forgotten, because the protesters, I mean, I think it's 169 days or something like that now that they've been out there every single day. So thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us and give us some perspectives from there. I have a new song to play here at the end. I think you'll like this
one.
Oh, nice. Yeah. All right, here we go.
I can hear my brother crying, I can't breathe. Now I'm in the struggle and I can't leave. Calling out the violence of relentless police. We ain't gonna stop till everyone's free.
Yo, I was gonna drop my tape a couple weeks from now, but I feel it in my soul, I need to speak right now. Crooked system in control, they say we weak right now. Young men ain't even safe walking the streets downtown. But this is more than pro-black recognition of the facts. That prolific proposition that initiated rap. They don't seem to understand it ain't about us fighting back. Until we learn to be preemptive, all we can do is react. Stuck up in a cycle, victim homicidal, viral instances, Instagram images, then forget what the mission is. Witness to the premises of prison systems that damages villages permanently. Terminally influenced, the ending is congruent with the ignorance. Let's talk about it. We've been rerouted, tear gas to symbolize the way in which our sight is clouded. Surrounded by misguided principles, nonsensical how government is not reciprocal to justice. It just is a framework protecting non-adjustment, and we call that injustice. And God that we trusted, but if God is for America, I'm sorry, I'm disgusted. Because how can we side with the corrupted when rights have been abducted? We need revolutionary eruption, radical combustion. So let us become the interruption, start a new discussion.
I can hear my neighbor crying, I can't breathe. Now I'm in the struggle and I can't leave. Calling out the violence of relentless police. We ain't gonna stop till everyone's free. No, till everyone's free. Say we ain't gonna stop till everyone's free. Everyone's free. Till everyone's free. We ain't gonna stop till everyone's free.
Demi Day. It's the movement. Hashtag Black Lives Matter. Hashtag Your Life Matters. Hashtag Our Lives Matter. Let's go.
That was Demi Day.
Her nice. Version.
That was a good one, right? I like that one.
Yes.
She's good. I thought you'd like that. Well, that says it. Have a great night. Thanks for joining us.